Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and we are back with the How Recruiting Works series. This was something that I kicked off last August, and it was met with some of the highest praise of anything I've ever done. And so, of course, we got to bring it back for 2024, and I'm really excited to begin with Army head coach Joe Alberici. Coach Alberici, how are you doing today? Thanks for joining.
Doing great, Terry. Thank you very much for having me on today, and thank you for all you're doing for lacrosse.
Well, that's very kind of you, but a little overstated. That notwithstanding, so the way that I structured this last year and aim to do so again this year is talking to a head coach from a program in each of the 10 conferences, because the nature of recruiting on a conference-to-conference basis is meaningfully different, such that hearing that diversity of perspective is really important. I would argue that within a conference, the Patriot League probably has the most diversity and variety. And last year, we talked to a coach whose recruiting system you're probably pretty familiar with in our friends at the Naval Academy, and then also with Ryan Pulley from Boston University. So I do think that we come to this with a little bit of a maybe fuller perspective than we might have prior to those two conversations. With all that being said, I do want to start by talking about the unique nature of being able to recruit beginning on July 1st. It's why we started with Navy last year, and it's why I want to begin with Army this year, because you guys are in it in a way that the rest of your colleagues are not. And so the unique perspective that you can provide is the binary distinction between what it's like to recruit after the rules changed versus before. Because you have both experiences. What was early recruiting like for Army, and how has it changed now that the rest of your peers, and you included, you can't talk to prospective student athletes until their junior year?
Yeah, Terry, I've got a really maybe even longer timeline than maybe what you were thinking of, because I go back, I was an assistant here in 95 and 96, and back then we could talk to juniors. You know, the difference was, we would talk to a couple of them, but nobody was thinking about it until their senior year. So it was not much of an advantage at that point. And then goodness, all of the rule changes have gone on, but we had always had a bit of a head start, on our counterparts. But during the days of early recruiting, when it was ninth grade and, you know, those young men were committing, There was very little distinction for us. I mean, in terms of the opportunity to try and connect in front of our peers. So, you know, in the more recent times, I you could tell me when that rule change exactly happened. I'm not positive, but the first couple of years of it really wasn't a big deal either, because we had already had so many kids committed in the ninth and 10th grade. So it's really more recent times. There's not a lot of cycles that have happened where we've been able to, you know, clearly have that 2-month jump. But, you know, speaking to it now, it has been a very positive for our program. It certainly ups the tempo of our summer and, you know, and going back further with it. But, you know, the positive aspect of being able to connect with young men that we have interest to vet and for them to vet our program in many cases may not have been afforded us if we were calling on September 1st along with everybody else, because maybe they only have a passing interest in West Point, you know, and it wouldn't have fit on their list with the others. Now we have that opportunity to showcase this institution and our program.
Yeah. So the rules changed in April of 2017, which meant that the class of 2017 was largely unaffected, as was the class of 2018. There was, you know, that, I guess we'll call it 135-day window where the last group of rising seniors had been evaluated and hadn't been able to. Well, that's not even true, I guess, because they would have already been seniors. So they were able to talk. It was really the 2019s.
We had guys that graduated this past season that I recruited when they were in ninth grade. You know, it was like there was a couple of those guys that were still with our program that that had gone back that far. So it's
amazing
how long that span is.
So your point is well taken. One of the important aspects of this is the evaluation timeline. I would imagine that compared to the majority of your peers who have all summer and they don't begin talking until September 1st, do you guys feel a little bit more pressure to have evaluated the class for, we're talking right now, the 26s, say last fall or during their high school season, so that you're not trying to jam everything into June?
Yeah, without question. So I would take it back, Terry, into their sophomore year. You know, for example, this fall, we'll start to turn some attention to the 27 class and just starting to get a little bit of that. And then the IMLCA event in December, you know, we run a couple of prospect days that we'll be trying to get 27s on, you know, onto campus. For that. And then, you know, we just need to do our due diligence throughout the season, you know, whether that's just checking websites about who's who, calling high school coaches about some of their underclassmen, you know, about their sophomores. And then once our season ends, we kind of go full bore into with the club coaches and communicating with them about what we already know, as well as things that we don't know. And just setting ourselves up, canvassing enough so that we can be as effective as possible, you know, come June when you know, the rush happens. So, you know, with all that being said, you know, I'm very certain there'll be a good portion of our recruiting class will be made up of guys who've yet to be contacted by Army. It's just the way it works or has worked in the past. I don't know what the percentages of it are, but you know, we've worked very hard as a staff to identify and then bring in as many of the top guys as we can. But you know, in the end, there's always others that show themselves, and you know, we've got to be ready to react to them when we do finally have some confirmation that they're our kind of player and our kind of person.
So you're in a unique position insofar as when a junior prospect hears from you on July 1st or at any point over the intervening 2 months, it's likely, you know, it may be the first Division I coach that he's heard from. And that is a very validating experience for many of those athletes. Certainly there's a percentage of them that, you know, have been told, like, this is the level that you project to. But until you hear from it, you know, I'm sure there's always going to be a little bit of doubt. What is it like managing or kind of handling that in-between phase where you have to understand that for a 16-year-old to hear from you is really exciting, and they, I'm sure that they want to go through the process just because they want to get a sense for what the process feels like and how it works relative to earnest interest in wanting to attend West Point and making sure that your time is well spent.
Sure. You know, we're in a great location here. You know, most of Long Island isn't too far away, 90 miles, you know, we can get into Philadelphia in you know, a 2 hour time frame, upstate New York, you know, so there's some places that really aren't too far away, Northern Jersey, of course. So, but when you do come visit West Point, I think you got to do it for more than just getting reps. You know, I think that's always our feeling. You know, we check the box for a lot of young men, and number one is the opportunity to get an elite education, you know. So if you're interested in that, then that fills the box. I think our consistency as a lacrosse program, it speaks for itself. And then, you know, the opportunities that this place gives. So it does attract a lot of people. And, you know, maybe I don't really get too much into why they're here. But when they're here, we just want to make sure we put our best foot forward, and we want to set a benchmark for them that, you know, for everybody else has to try and come and meet, whether that's the other service academies or, you know, come September 1st. And you know, hopefully we can develop a relationship through our time spent here as well as our, you know, time on the phone with them, makes it a place that maybe they weren't thinking of at the beginning, but a hard place to end up having to say no to.
So we're recording this on August 7th. So it's been 38 days. As far as Inside Lacrosse knows, you've received 4 commitments in this class. About how many visits would you say you've hosted?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have found that this year, above some of the other years, previous years, that, you know, our visits have gotten, you know, well into close to 50 visits. And you know, they've, for us, it's a lot of effort to make sure that that goes well. You know, one of the great things that we have going for us here, Terry, is everybody gets a full scholarship, right? But it also doesn't differentiate anybody from another person. So, you know, our goal as a staff, and it always has been, our currency is time. You know, so we want to make sure that we are investing in each and every family that comes in, and, you know, obviously showcasing a spectacular institution and an amazing program in the right way, so that we're giving things for people to think about, you know, on the way out the door. So, again, there's varying levels of interest coming in. And varying levels of knowledge. You know, I mean, some are, hey, I just want to take a peek at this. And others have been thinking about it for months, or, you know, in a couple occasions, not many, but few occasion years, you know, they've been tied to this place. So, it is a process where, we want to make sure to our best ability is that we're not missing anybody, fully knowing that there'll be guys missed, and we're yet to, as I said earlier, we still haven't yet been in contact with them, but, you know, hope to in short time.
That kind of sets up a natural segue to where I want to take this conversation next, which is basically, obviously, I want to talk about what type of lacrosse player does Army want to have a part of its program. But let's start by talking about what type of individual does Army want to have be a part of its program, and specifically with respect to that individual's desire to be at Army. Let me ask this a direct way. I think you've kind of already answered it, but do you think that you could build a roster solely out of men who wanted to go to Army prior to receiving a phone call from you that would be good enough, that would compete at the standard that you have for this program?
No chance. West Point is a place that, everybody knows something about Terry. You know, my family and I, we took a vacation to Italy and France and Spain last summer. And, you know, we're on these tours, and the tour guide happens to ask on 3 or 4 different occasions in these different places, you know, where we're from. And, you know, we live on this campus, so we say West Point. They all knew it. You know, it was amazing. Like, people like, oh, the academy, you know, like it's world known. But very few people know a lot about it, you know? So to think that we could build a roster on people who just want to come here, that can compete at the level we've been competing at, that wouldn't be possible.
So then it leads to the very natural follow-up, which is, how willing are you to convince somebody that Army is for them? Because it's possible that you could convince somebody and it's just not for them. Meaning that I would imagine that it puts a fair burden on you and your staff to be able to say, this kid may not know it right now, but he is a fit, he can handle it, and this will be the best thing for him. Conversely, to say, we would love to have this kid be a part of our team, but he can't handle the experience being at the academy, and so we have to not pursue him. What's that like? How do you balance that?
Yeah, I think that's a, you know, that just takes time. You know, that takes time. So we are certainly willing to bring people on campus that we're not certain that they're certain of this place, right? I mean, we just need to bring them on and expose them to it. Cause West Point is something that you can, again, you can get on the, you know, you can go into Forbes magazine and learn about, you know, their career earnings for, you know, once for a West Pointer, you can get on, you know, the U.S. News and World Report and see where it's ranked. And, you know, you can talk to people about it, but it really is a place you got to feel, you know, you got to feel it. And that necessitates you being on this campus. That necessitates you being with our coaching staff and people who are involved with the program. And, you know, then you can start to feel whether this is a place for you, you know, just to, based on what you read or what you heard, I think you're doing yourself an injustice as a student athlete to say, that's just not for me, when you don't really know what it is. So, you know, from our standpoint, you know, we are continually evaluating those recruits on those interactions, just like they're evaluating West Point and the coaching staff. So, you know, we're back and forth, and there's just little cues that you get around, you know, the experience as you're touring them around or as they're speaking of their experience. But, you know, I don't know of a lot of people who, you know, are, number one, know exactly what they want, you know, until it's presented to them. And then number two, you know, I think that this is something I constantly try to get across to the young men I'm talking to is, listen, nobody's 100% sure of anything. You know, the only thing you're 100% sure of is what you're looking in the rearview mirror at. You know, like, you just, there just comes a time where you know enough, and then you take a bet on yourself. And that certainly is applicable to West Point, but that's applicable to any school. You know, I mean, that's like, you know, the people who say, oh, I knew all the time, you know, they're looking at it 4 years later and they, after they've graduated and they had a wonderful experience. Those are the young men who say they knew all the time, because there's always that little uncertainty about, you know, this aspect of a program or that aspect. Now for us, because 95% of the young men that are in our program have very little exposure to anything military. You know, that just takes more education on our part.
And how different is it to educate mom and dad? How important is that in the process? And how much do you feel like you run up against an instance where maybe the son wants to come, but maybe mom is against it? I mean, the U.S. Army actually created an advertising campaign specifically to address that particular issue. But one of the things that I would imagine makes this even more interesting now than it was 400 days ago or whatever, is that you can speak very pointedly about being the dad of a West Point lacrosse player. So you've very much put your money where your mouth is.
That's true. You know, we have a saying here, and you know, Terry, this is my 20th season, and I feel like if all I ever had to do is recruit dads, I would have at least 10 national championships. There's no doubt about it. It's just dads. But you know, listen, it's an education for everyone, it is getting people to understand what your experience is here and what West Point is here for. And that is to develop leaders of character. Like, that is why it exists, to create leaders of character for this country, not just in the Army, but for this country. So, you know, getting them to understand that, you know, the specialness of the people in this organization, the cadets, the specialness really lies in their desire to do something special, you know, that much more so than, you know, they grew up playing, you know, G.I. Joe in the backyard their whole life. Those aren't our guys. That's not what makes up our locker room, you know. And then also getting them to understand, you know, what the opportunity is in the Army and the vast array of things you can do in the Army, the leadership that you'll be counted on when you're in the Army, and then what that does in terms of developing you, you know, like that, yes, you are committing to serving your country, but there's an incredible commitment that comes back to you by making that choice. And that commitment doesn't go away. I mean, that is a lifetime that keeps coming. You have a West Point attached to your name, you know, for forever. And so, you know, those are the things that we try to convey. And, you know, you were referencing, you know, 400 days. I wasn't counting, but my daughter is going to be part of the women's lacrosse program next year. And listen, it was her decision. I did no recruiting, but you know, when she came down to it, you know, she told me what her answer was, and she told, you know, she called Coach Tumalo on that. And I asked her why, and she said, because it was the school I'd be most proud of graduating from. And, you know, I'm getting a little emotional just saying that, you know, but it's a special place. The people have asked me, you know, like, well, how do you feel about your daughter coming to West Point? Well, I was like, well, for 19 years, I've been recruiting, and I fully believe that this is the greatest academic institution in the world. And that's not selling it, you know, like that this is the greatest academic institution in the world. And, you know, I meant that for my daughter too, you know, it wasn't just for everybody else's child. So I couldn't be more proud of her and excited for her journey and, you know, on the field. And of course, all that West Point will do to make her as good as she possibly can be.
This is a sidebar I wasn't expecting to take, but I have to take the opportunity because it's one of the most interesting elements of this conversation that we can have. I'll frame it with an example that is unrelated but relevant, which is Kirsten Kimmel was part of leading the IWLCA's process of pushing back the date of first contact with, you know, prospective student athletes. And a huge part of what informed her perspective in order to provide the motivation to make that change was being the parent of a child going through the process and realizing the threat that early recruiting posed. So the reason I bring that up is because there's a lot of things that coaches might intellectually understand as coaches that until they experience it as parents, they don't emotionally understand it. And one of the elements that I love talking about with lacrosse parents who go through the recruiting process with their kids is you recruit against these institutions all the time, but you've never gone on a tour of their institution. Like, unless you worked there before, like, you don't really even know what anything other than the visiting locker room and field looks like. 'Cause there's almost this, like, you know, an unwritten rule of counter ops where you're like not allowed to I don't know, do it, I guess. What was it like? And what did you learn? And how have you applied maybe some of those lessons to your job by being the parent of a recruited lacrosse player, even though obviously it was a women's lacrosse player, not a men's lacrosse player?
So, you know, I would say a lot of it, a big part of it was fell to my wife, Petra. She took her to these different places, whether it was a prospect day or you know, a couple of the visits, so I wasn't necessarily in and around for all of it. I was just the sounding board, you know. So I was the translator sometimes. Like, okay, that's what this means, you know. Well, you sure? And my wife, I love her, but you know, she definitely could question me about what my knowledge is around lacrosse and in college lacrosse. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure that's what that would mean. But I did find it a bit. There was just a lot I didn't know. You know, I mean, there was a lot actually going back to when she was a young. Girl in like the club situation. Like I didn't know that they started in clubs that young. I just didn't. And I had been in the game for 20 years. I just didn't know that, you know, sixth and seventh graders were in clubs. And, you know, people are probably laughing on like, yeah, well, second grade is when they're in clubs, you know. But our area isn't filled with a lot of lacrosse, like in the immediate area. You got to go over to the river, and then you have, you know, incredible places like Yorktown and Lakeland and, you know, and down into that area, Rye and the Merrimack and all those. So those are right around the corner, but like right here at West Point and surrounding, not so much. So yeah, it was a good education for me around it. You know, some things were definitely worthy of emulation, and then some things you just say, you know, were great reminders. Like that's not how you want to do that. You know, it was a good experience for Isabella, and again, just, you know, super proud of her decision, and, you know, we're wishing for the best.
I do want to double back on one of the kind of adjacent points with a very direct question, and it's really more for my curiosity than anything else. And I will fully concede that there are a lot of independent variables, such as your state in your career, or the state of competitiveness of your program, or the state of college athletics and college lacrosse, that make it very hard to answer this question. But have you found that the state of global conflict, particularly whether or not the U.S. was at war, affected the way in which your message was received in recruiting, or has that been pretty independent, or maybe only applicable in some, you know, the minority of cases?
Yeah. So I got to dial this back even a bunch more years. When I was at recruiting, or what I remembered as a recruiter here in '95 and '96. Was I felt like I had to explain what West Point was a lot more than when I came back in 06. You know, I felt like that there was a much better understanding of West Point. I felt a greater appreciation for the Army and our military forces at that time. Now, and it also probably drew, you know, during those conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, because I was coaching right through all of that, I think it probably drew a harder line for some folks. You know, so I don't know that there's been more interest since that time or less interest. I just feel like there's been a clearer understanding. Terry, I don't know if I'm articulating that the right way, but that's just
how
I look at it. There's a clearer understanding of what West Point is. It's not just what's going on in the world that they know that, but probably a lot going on in the lacrosse world that they know about that, and availability of social media and you know, YouTube and things like that. It just seems like there's a greater understanding of it, but there also feels like there's this stronger connection to somebody in the Army. Like, I know somebody in my neighborhood who, you know, went to West Point, or who, you know, served in the Army, served with West Point people. You know, that kind of connection feels stronger. And maybe I'm making it up, but I just that's been my sense of it.
No, I think your point is exactly right, insofar as I think most everybody knows a lot more about the things they want to know about than they did before the internet existed. And, you know, just as kind of a example of that. So my brother, and you'll appreciate this, he's 8 years older than me. And one of the most formative experiences of his lacrosse career was the summer between his, I believe it was freshman and sophomore year of high school. So this probably would have been like the summer of 93. He actually attended what I think was called like the Black Knight Shooter School or something along those lines, and he was a goalie. And I remember him coming home from camp, and I had no idea what was going on, but basically he slept for like 3 days, and the only time he would wake up would be to like replace the ice packs that he had on his legs, because he had just gotten shelled so badly for like 3 straight days. And actually this was probably the following year, because He, you know, he's from Cleveland, Ohio in the early 90s, like not garnering a ton of attention, but he was like a 6'1 lefty. So depending on your style, like that could be, you know, what you were looking for. You didn't need a hot better in order to like find a good goalie. And so like the one place that he actually got interest from was Amherst, but he had no idea what Amherst was. There is like a suburb in Cleveland called Amherst that is like not a NESCAC place. So yeah. He was like, thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to go to this, like, you know, Jesuit college in St. Louis instead. Little did he know that, like, if he had studied what he eventually ended up studying, which was art history, he probably would be, like, you know, the curator of a museum in London or whatever. But he didn't know because there was no internet and there was no way to know. I figured that you would appreciate that.
Yeah, you have to get back on the school computer, and then if you went to colleges, they would print out something about them that would give you like location and how many kids went to school there and majors or something like that. But it was a real process for sure.
So let's transition to talking about your roster. I think that there are two specific things that I want to dive into. And I think one is who is an Army lacrosse player? And part of that includes who isn't. And then separately, I want to, you know, talk about how that's changed over time. So let's start in the first place, which is, and I understand that depending on the position on the field, maybe some of the attributes that you value change. But on a general basis, when you or Coach Rogelis or Coach Ward are sitting on the sidelines, what is it that you need to see in order to say, yeah, maybe he's one of ours? And what is it that if you see or don't see, then you know immediately he is not one of ours?
Yeah, I you know, from what you see, Terry, and I'll fully admit, I tend to spend more time in things that are qualifiers than what are non-qualifiers, you know, because I don't know, that's just how I've been, you know, as I find something, I see something, I think about what we could be able to do with that. We, I believe, really in our development here. And, you know, I also see some of those non-qualifiers as things that we can work through or overcome or might make that quote unquote non-qualifier might not make him, you know, a first choice of an ACC or a Big Ten or something like that. So I do tend to spend a little bit more time in the qualifiers and that is a couple of different things, Terry. One is straight up production. You know, like if you've got a guy who's producing, that just catches our attention. And that is the obvious side on the offensive end and being part of scoring situations, whether that's creating them, you know, making the pass to the person who makes the pass, to a person who's actually just filling it up themselves. But, you know, the producers, when, you know, you look down and you're like, man, that's probably like the fifth ground ball that kid's got, you know, I mean, he's producing. And then, you know, the things on the defensive end and how you're seeing the defense play, like, man, when the kid was not in there, they were giving up a lot of goals. When he was in there, although he didn't stop the balls, you know, all these times, the ball wasn't going in the net, whether he was on ball or not. So I think there's a production piece, and then there's the things athletically that you look for, right? And that's you know, how does he move his feet? You know, what's his speed like? Is that more directly? What's his quickness like? What's that first, you know, three or four steps coming out of a dodge look like? Or what's that, you know, first two or three steps when he's got to drop, when he's got to drop step and run, you know, the idea of like, he's got great, you know, 40 yard speed. Those opportunities to demonstrate 40 yard speed are very few and far between. It's like, how fast are you in that 10 yards? And then, you know, the skill, you know, do they have something that is above everybody else on the field? You know, a simple one is, hey, the lefty goal scorer. Yeah, you know, he doesn't move his feet great, but boy, you know, the ball gets in a stick and it's going in the net at a high rate. So you kind of, those buckets of just straight up production, that athleticism, and then, you know, the skill piece that our game has, and, you know, it's a variety of, depending upon position, Those sort of things are what we're looking for on the you know, that are catching our attention. And then, you know, around that, we're trying to do our homework around competitiveness, toughness. Are they playing other sports? You know, those are things that, you know, start to put together the picture of what an Army lacrosse player is. But again, I just would emphasize that my staff would be just that way. And they've got great eyes. I mean, you know, Kyle Georgelis has been doing this for a long time, and he's excellent. And so is Justin Ward and Rick Lewis, you know, and having a fourth set of eyes out there has been really beneficial for us this summer. So, you know, they all have a little bit of their own unique tastes. You know, but I would find us more looking towards like what they can do, and believing like, boy, with that at this place, they could be something special.
So first of all, apologies to Coach Lewis. I didn't forget about you this time. I just forgot about the notion of the fourth assistant being allowed to be on the road. But separate from that, is this impression that I have valid or coincidental, but, you know, not invalid? So obviously there are exceptions like Jeremy Boltis and Brendan Nickdern and Reese Bierich. But generally speaking, it seems as if being 6'2 to 6'5 is an advantage in terms of ending up on Army's radar more so than some of your other peers. And I say that not just on the basis of the Jackson Ikers who end up being starters and contributors, but also, you know, some of the guys who are 15, 16, 17 players in the class who are guys that I really like, but weren't getting a ton of other looks. And it felt like you took a chance on him because he was 6'6 and who knows what he's going to turn into. Is that real, or am I just imposing that on you based on my impressions?
Yeah, I think you're imposing that a little bit, Terry. I think it's like, it might be something around, you know, you probably see us on the road most of the time and we're in that all black. We look a little more menacing or something, but I look.
It might be something about me being 5'9". I don't know. That might have something to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the best players on our team right now, I mean, you know, Will Colletti is not a big face-off guy. You know, Evan Plunkett is on the smaller side, and he was very small when we recruited him. And you know, they've built themselves up. AJ Pilot, you know, is not a big defenseman. You know, I like that impression because what you're telling me is those guys are playing big. You know, they're playing big and looking big. So no, Yeah, I would definitely push back on that. I think that the size piece is a very limited conversation that our staff has. Like, you know, of course we you know, would like, if you gave me an equal guy, one was 6'2", 200, and one was, you know, 5'8", 150, I'm going to take the 6'2", 200 if they got equal abilities. But, you know, if there's things that the 5'8", 150 guy can do, you know, we'll take them. I mean, I think if you remember, because I know you've got a great mind for the history of this game here, not that it's a long history, but, you know, we had a great attack in those days with Connor Cook, who, you know, was 5'4" and Cole Johnson, who was, you know, never got over 160 pounds, you know. Listen, we added John Glesner onto that unit, and he'd probably make everybody good. But, you know, that was 2/3 of our attack. I don't think we put an overemphasis on size. You know, we just want the best players. And I guess, you know, we want those guys that will play bigger than their size, whether they're 6'4" or whether they're, 5'4".
So I want to be clear that you're allowed to answer it has not. But the second thing that I mentioned I wanted to attack is, how has your recruiting changed, particularly from the standpoint of what you value, or maybe like kind of what the minimum quality standard was? You know, this was a program that beat Syracuse in 2010 in the NCAA tournament to advance to the quarterfinals. So it's not as if this was, it's not as if the success that your program has had is newfound or recent. But I also think that, you know, maybe from a consistency standpoint, maybe you have been a little bit more consistent over the course of the last 5 years than, you know, preceding. I don't know. I haven't done the math in order to be able to say that definitively. If your recruiting has changed over the course of your 20 years, how has it changed? And if it hasn't, I don't even know what the follow-up question is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the bottom line is this the right guy for us? Now, I think, you know, within some of the things that you spoke of around your ability to know more things about a school, it works the same thing for us. You know, it's like there's more greater ways to know more about other players. And there's more of them, you know, and there's more of them. So I don't know that we've changed much recruiting philosophy or, you know, you have to be this in order to be us, as much so as the interest level that we've been able to generate has continually, increased, and we've had a greater reach to even more and more talented players, you know, as opposed to us like saying, hey, you know, here's the bar, he's not this, we're not taking him. You know, I don't think that there's anything conscious around that. It's just the player pool that we've been able to communicate with and develop interest in the institution and ultimately bring to West Point has grown in depth, which is, I think, consistent with just the depth of lacrosse players. I mean, you know, my goodness, you know, you just so many great players out there. There are so many of them, and you know, so we've just been able to, you know, reach a more deep audience of talented players. And I think that that's probably more of the story than, you know, our recruiting changing in terms of, you know, anything that would be noticeable.
So to begin to kind of wind this conversation down, the last element that I wanted to discuss, It combines two different elements, or maybe even three elements of your program that I think are interesting, unique, worth talking about, and the types of things that folks listening to this would want to know more about. You mentioned earlier that one of your assets or your chief asset is time. You also have a relatively chief asset in terms of volume. Our list has your class of 25 at 20 recruits. Obviously there's a prep school opportunity that I'm sure some of those guys are going to go to. And then, you know, the last element is around the recently discussed roster cap issue with respect to the House settlement. And so in that's kind of, you know, it ties together three interesting issues or topics that I kind of want to handle independently. The first is, how do you guys go about deciding what the right number of players in a class is? Is there a number that's too big? Is there a number that's too small? And or is it just a function of, you know, if we think this player is a fit and we want him to be a part of the program, then we're going to do our best to make the opportunity available to him?
Yeah, so you're right, Terry. That the upper end of it is probably, we've got a little bit higher ceiling than maybe some of the other teams that we're playing against. But we have, you know, 20, as you said, in 2025, and those guys are being distributed between the prep school and direct admission, you know, largely based on just where they fit academically. All of them are good students, just who needs it and who doesn't. And that's not my decision. That's an academic decision. So sometimes those numbers that are reported are not inaccurate, but don't tell necessarily the whole story. And, you know, so that's not 20 boys coming into our program in the 25 class. Some of them are going to the prep school. In terms of, you know, being able to work with a little bit larger roster. So we have been into the lower 60s, in terms of a team, which many of our counterparts are I guess it depends on who you are, but, you know, are working anywhere from 48 to upper to mid 50s. So there's a few more. I've felt that it has worked very well in our program. One, it creates a great competitive environment in practice. Two, I think, again, very biased, but I think I have the very best coaching staff, assistant coaches in the country, and we're coaching all of them. So those guys know, and they get in here, this isn't going to be the haves and the rest of you are not being worked with, not being developed. So I really, you're being coached when you're here, and you're being developed while you're here, and you're being given opportunity. But probably at the core of all of it is just this institution and our program, are what we're emphasizing, and the people who desire to be part of this, who make the decision to come into the Army Lacrosse family and to come to the United States Military Academy. Those are people who desire to be part of something bigger than themselves. And that works great in our locker room. You know, I'm not dealing with selfish young men. I'm dealing with people who love the people next to them. And I'm dealing with young men who are pushing all the time to get better. And I'm dealing with young men who, if they aren't the best at their position at that time, they're going to continue to work. But they're also going to be the greatest advocate for that young man who's in front of them. It's a special place. It's a special locker room. And that has afforded us this opportunity to bring more people into our family because it's worked, you know. And I've never experienced at the end of the year where some of the guys, you know, are just falling off by the wayside and not, you know, like have become a distraction. Their role, everybody ends up with a role that they've defined for themselves based on their play and based on who they are as a teammate. And it's my job and it's our coach's job to celebrate that and to make sure they understand how important it is what they're doing to our overall success, and that's been working for us, and I would say will continue along that line till it's proven, you know, to not work.
I don't want to infer that response was like in some way kind of defensive. I do know that there are folks who think that large rosters are not conducive to the best environments or whatever, but I want to make it clear, and I'm not really saying this for your benefit, I'm kind of saying it for the benefit of the listeners, you know, what my point of view is with respect to, you know, roster size, roster management, and we can talk about the notion of imposed roster caps that may or may not be forthcoming depending on how some of this, you know, adjudication comes to pass. But, you know, the way that I see it is, you know, regardless of squabbling, so to speak, about is the U.S. Military Academy the number one, number two, number five institution academically in the world, it is a life-changing experience to have the opportunity to go through it. And in probably many graduates' cases, generationally so. And in addition to that, having an opportunity to be an athlete, and this point isn't unique or specific to Army. I think this is true for pretty much every college athlete. Like, the folks that want to say rosters should be smaller, I think, are being a little insensitive to the fact that, you know, a lot of guys want to be a member, or a lot of women want to be a member of a team for reasons that are different from simply being able to perform on game day. And as long as they're comfortable with that and understand what, to your point, that self-defined role is and are happy to pursue what that role is, I think there's tremendous value both for the individual as well as for their families, right? Like, you know, there were seasons where I was barely got off the bench. My dad enjoyed and my mom enjoyed going to my games just as much as the star player on the team. And I enjoyed being a part of that team just as much as the star player on the team. It was as transformative as almost any experience that I had. So this notion that because there is an external point of view that if you're not contributing to winning, then you shouldn't be satisfied by the experience is ridiculous, right? And it just totally, in my opinion, it totally undermines the notion of a combination of being a part of a team as well as like betting on yourself from the standpoint of improvement, right? Like, I'm sorry, that was a rant.
Yeah, no, Terry, you're right on. And I apologize if it came off defensive. That was not what I was trying to do.
I'm probably being defensive.
I feel like, you know, listen, when it comes to West Point, you know, we can, there's a lot of things that at this institution they can argue is the most important thing, you know, and that's what makes it great. You know, the math people think like, hey, you got to have math, you know, like that's so important. And the military folks like, that is so important. And then the DPE, the phys ed, you know, this is so important to developing a leader. And, you know, all of those things are important, as are athletics. But the one thing that I stand by for the last 20 years is I know what the most impactful thing is. And that is lacrosse. That is their experience in lacrosse is the most impactful time. Now, that's what I know about West Point. I went to a small school, Alfred University, and that was 30-something years ago, 33 maybe, something years ago. And I would say the same thing, that lacrosse program in those 4 years that I spent there are the most impactful thing. And not because I'm a lacrosse coach, but when I think back to my college experience as a Division III player, I think back, or as a Division III student athlete, I think back to the athletic piece, you know, because it was of the intensity of those situations that was the most impactful, most defining for me. And I would, you know, I'm with you when I say, man, you know, what are we doing around limiting rosters? You know, you're depriving opportunities for impactful things for young men and women that will be things that they will remember for a lifetime, but will serve them for a lifetime. Because what goes on in this world that doesn't involve working with a team? You know, what is worthwhile that isn't uphill, right? You know, these are things that athletics and lacrosse teach you, you know, and to deprive roster slots, you know, I mean, it can be argued because we're not part of that, like that would be an advantage for us, but I don't want to see that imposed on anybody, you know, because it's taken away opportunity and it's opportunity that again, I keep coming back to this, that will serve them for a lifetime.
About the prep school. Well, you and me both, man. About the prep school. So it's on campus or adjacent to campus. Is that right?
It is. Yeah. It's
so that makes it distinct. Yeah. That makes it distinct from the Naval Academy Prep School, which is in Newport, Rhode Island, as opposed to the Academy, which is in Annapolis. So how do you describe the connective tissue or the connectivity between the prep school team and the varsity college team?
Right. So what it is it is, and this is compliance. They are to be treated like high school students. So they're still recruitable athletes there. But with that being said, they're a mile away, you know, so they're high school athletes that are a mile away, you know, so that just affords you the chance to strengthen your connection with them, strengthen their connection to this team, and helps to, you know, assimilate them and on in a quicker onboard when they when they, you know, do arrive as freshmen. And also, the other aspect of it being a military school, they're going to understand the ways and the standards that are expected of a cadet. So it's been great for us, it certainly isn't the only way to impact our program. There's great players that impact our program. They have come in direct or prep, but again, when you talk about opportunity, it opens the gates to a premier academic institution for a young man who is a good student. I mean, like, we're not talking about bad students here, a good student, but maybe not quite at where they need to be to be successful at West Point. And that's what that year gives them academically.
Joe Barricci, we kept you longer than we said we were going to. We really apologize for that, but I really enjoyed the conversation and am super appreciative and grateful for your time, insight, and wish you the best of luck as you continue to recruit this class of 2026 and get ready to head back to fall ball once the leaves start to turn a little bit yellow, a little bit orange, in one of the best places in the entire United States to check out the foliage. And can't wait to see your boys take the field once. Well, I wanted to say winter turns to spring, but we all know that you guys are going to be playing with like 7 weeks left in winter. So I guess when the calendar turns from January to February is a better way of putting it.
Yeah. Well, Terry, thank you for having me on here. And, you know, I'll say it publicly, but what I say to you every time after we get done talking, I feel like I learned something, and I just, I really appreciate, your intentionality in which you approach any conversation. It is unique and it stands out, and I'm greatly appreciative of it.
Awesome. Well, can't wait to do it again, whether it's recorded or not. And in the meantime, enjoy what remains of your summer.
Thank you.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.